Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The United States has over 1,000 community colleges. 22 are here in Ohio. While Ohio State gets most of the attention, Columbus State Community College is an important economically and educationally to the region. Serving more than 40,000 full and part-time students, Columbus State is the largest community college in Ohio. For the past 15 years, our guest has created innovative programs to help more students obtain an affordable higher education. And joining us this hour is David Harrison, president of Columbus State Community College. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me.
So there were billions of dollars that were frozen by the Trump administration as he battled with different elite universities. But has that had a trickle-down effect? Did it reach research done at your community college?
Well, we don't do research, but it's certainly been something that we've been paying close attention to. We do get a lot of federal funding through the Department of Education, Department of Labor, primarily through the National Science Foundation. We get more NSF funding than any community college in the country. And I describe all of these grants as venture capital. The funding we get from the state really funds our annual schedule. So the ability for us to really be innovative requires other resources. And a lot of that has been through federal funding. Our NSF grants, our IT programs, for example, have really expanded over the last decade. All of those have been funded by NSF grants. We've only lost one so far that, I mean, they're all significant, but it didn't stop us from doing, it was supplemental to a lot of other work that we're doing. But it is something we're paying attention to. We've received one new one most recently in artificial intelligence and submitted four more last week. So we are staying the course, paying attention to what's going on. Again, it hasn't had a direct financial impact significantly yet, but we've got a lot of people who are relying on those funds and a lot of students who are relying on them, so that's something we're paying attention to.
The National Science Foundation grant you said you did lose, was it for a particular program that maybe, was it geared towards something that the administration objected to, or you don't know why?
No, it was I don't know why, honestly. It was supplemental to a lot of work we're doing in engineering, technology, advanced manufacturing, and specifically focused on recruiting and preparing faculty, doing some other outreach, but that was the primary focus.
You don't hear much about new grants being awarded. So the fact that you're applying for new ones and you have a new one awarded, I mean, that's a great thing. So the process is still happening and moving despite what you hear about grants being pulled.
It is, and you know, it's a little more sporadic than what it had been, you know, we're paying attention to the news as it comes out, but we're staying the course. We've got an incredible team that works on this, and again, pays attention every day to what's going on, so far, so good. You know, you never know what the next day brings.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, that's great to hear that you have so many grants and you do rely on federal funding and that it's still there. So talk to me a little bit about state funding. How much of your funding comes? You just mentioned all those grants that are federal. How much funding comes from the state of Ohio?
So our operating budget is about half and half between state funding and tuition. The grant funding that I described, as I said, that really doesn't impact our operating budget. Those are temporary dollars anyway. So we, like I said, we use those for innovative projects.
Okay. So was anything impacted at the state level or in this most recent budget cycle? Did you keep your funding?
We did. Actually got a slight increase, got some additional flexibility with regard to to tuition. And, you know, there were some modifications that were made to the funding formula that that I think are positive. Community colleges in the state are funded fully by student success, not enrollment. And one of the changes that was made in this biennium was a portion of our state funding called state share of instruction will be allocated through post-completion outcomes, specifically earnings.
That's what you mean by funded by success. So it's graduation and getting a job. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that was added to it. Typically, it had been course success and some milestones during that students would hit during their associate degree path. But this year, post-completion outcomes were added, which is exactly what you said. It's getting a good job and making a good living. And we do well in that regard. So when it comes to allocation of the state share of instruction, we're in a better place than we were prior to the budget.
How do you follow students to know whether they have a good job or the job they want? I guess the job they wanted and a good job could be two different things. But yeah. how do you track that?
The Ohio Department of Higher Education has a system, and really there's a national network that helps plug that in. So we follow what they tell us. We don't have to do that on our own.
You're not like emailing every student being like, what are you doing now?
We do stay in close touch with our students as we can, but that's not a systemic way to do it.
Yeah, that, I would think that would be hard to track someone and then define good job, right? This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the importance of community colleges with David Harrison, president of Columbus State Community College. We've spent a lot of time on this program talking about Ohio's sweeping higher education bill, Senate Bill 1. Did this law impact community colleges as much as we've heard about it impacting four-year institutions?
Yeah, it's something that impacts all public institutions in the state. And we've been working with the legislature and understanding what the anticipated outcomes were from the beginning. So that's a long-winded yes.
Yes. So as an example, I was trying to figure out things. You used to have what was called an equity and compliance office, and now it's just the compliance office. Is that a change you made because of Senate Bill 1?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, language is part of it, and you know, we are complying with the law.
Do you still have a DEI office, or did you change that?
We don't have an explicit DEI office, but we do have the most diverse student body in any higher ed institution in Central Ohio by far. So that making sure that they all have a path to success is a priority for us.
Do you have an office where they can go to? I don't know. Some places call it belonging. I mean, everyone's changing the words, but do you is there a place for students who maybe are from different backgrounds to get help?
We do. We've actually got multiple spaces in that regard. We really try to help students connect with other students who have similar goals, and in some cases who do come from similar backgrounds, and sometimes those overlap. So whether it's veterans or whether it's women pursuing engineering technology degrees or our international students, all of those students, it's important that they feel like Columbus State is their home. That's something that is part of our makeup from the beginning. So it's much more than an office. It's really more an ethos that we really have built into the college culture.
Have you heard anything from faculty related to the parts of Senate Bill 1 where they can't give opinions and they feel like what they can teach is being impacted?
Yeah, we're having a lot of conversations with faculty in large groups and small, and really trying to, again, create a path where there's open communication. You know, the bill was passed last spring, but as our faculty entered class this fall, it was really the first time that it was in place while they were in the classroom. And what's happening on a day-to-day basis is something that's top of mind for them. So we are trying to make sure that communication is open and we'll learn together as this evolves.
Columbus State could also be impacted because Senate Bill 1 has provisions which say that certain degree programs, if you don't have enough enrollment in it, the degree program needs to be eliminated. So I read that Columbus State ended physical education coaching degree and a physical education teaching degree, also an automotive technology service management program. Was that related to this?
It was. A lot of that has to do with how our programs were defined. So the programs that you mentioned and a few more were really combined into other degree programs. Mm-hmm. So no faculty were impacted directly in that regard. Some of our programs differ only by a course or two. Mm-hmm. So this did, encourage us to take a step back and look at the efficiencies that were part of that. And that's really what led to that list.
Is there more? So, I mean, that list is not as extensive as I've seen at other institutions. Right. So are there other programs you're looking at? You have some programs that were kind of borderline low enrollment that you need to look at in the future?
This is really something we have done routinely for years anyway. So it wasn't as much a step change for us, perhaps, as it was for others. It did provide a little more structure in terms of what the law called mm-hmm. for, but it's part of an annual process for us anyway. So I don't see it changing dramatically going forward.
Okay, the law kind of put a number on it and was mm-hmm. like,
yep,
it has to.
Exactly,
you have
right.
under five people over the course of so many years, right? Yeah,
took the judgment out.
Yeah, right. It's, where it's like if it's four or six, you were like, I don't know, but
right.
Okay. There's also grant funding, financial aid for low-income students and staff. There's grants that have been threatened or eliminated. Are you finding that you're able to still meet the financial needs of your students? Are they able to find the money they need for college, or have they been having trouble with financial aid?
We think we're okay for now. I mean, there was some delay and some different communication with regard, especially the federal financial aid work.
The FAFSA form was having a lot of problems in the past few months.
We're off to a really good start this fall. We're at our highest enrollment that we've been for more than a decade. Mm-hmm. Most of our students are with financial need in some form. Our team has done an incredible job. Our faculty and staff have done an incredible job of really pivoting and helping students understand, well, if this isn't available, this option is, and really filling those gaps. So far, so good. Again, you don't know what the next day brings, but we're off to a great start now.
Do you feel the idea I mentioned at the beginning that community colleges really impact the economy and they have an educational importance for a community? Talk to me about Columbus State's role here in Central Ohio from an economic perspective. I mean, you have a lot of students and you have a lot of students learning. They're on your campus, a lot of different programs.
Yeah, this is a great town to do what I do for a living. I'll just say it that way. I mean, Columbus is a great college town. Certainly Ohio State gets a lot of credit for that brand, if you will. But there are a lot of other private institutions in Central Ohio that we partner with. We're the only open access institution in the Columbus area.
What does that open access mean?
It means anyone who wants to be a student at Columbus State is a student. We don't mm-hmm. ask for SAT scores. The way some of my colleagues describe it is we admit the top 100% of all students. And that's a big deal. I mean, we really meet students where they are and help them reach their goals. That has become even more critical as the job market has changed in Central Ohio. And a huge part of what we do is work with employers and help students get good jobs. Talent development and economic prosperity is really the through line to our values. We meet students where they are and help them to reach their goals. We're blessed to have really creative employers from a lot of different industries in Central Ohio that have been creative partners in terms of different kinds of career paths for our students. As I said, our students lead complicated lives. Almost all of them work. Most of them work 30 hours or more. Our last survey had over almost 25% were parents, most of them mothers, and many of them single mothers. So you think of those kinds of complexities, but the ability, the resilience that that creates, and then the ability to really find a great fit for them in a great job and a high growth career. That doesn't happen everywhere, but that's really being embraced in Central Ohio.
What is your on like taking classes in person versus taking classes online? What does that look like? Because I know it changed for everyone during the pandemic, but I would have to think for a community college, having those online classes would be beneficial for the variety and the diversity of need. So did you keep or did you go all back in person, or did you keep some of them?
Before the pandemic, we were on average about 20% of the student of the classes that students were taking were online. Of course, that went up to 100% for a while during the pandemic. But the great thing about that was we had experienced faculty who helped each other out, because not all of our faculty teach online, but helped each other out to really do a high quality job during the pandemic. Post pandemic, we're a little higher. We're about 25%. We've got more students now that are fully online than had been before, because we've got more programs that are now accessible fully online. You know, part of it was a catalyst through COVID. But you're exactly right. It's an important element for our busy students. And we have students who will take an online class in our library because they've got a 9 o'clock class and a 1 o'clock class. So between those two classes, they're taking their third class online with the support from our library staff.
Do you feel like are there certain classes that are being demanded to be online? How do you decide what is an in-person class and what needs to be online?
Well, we work through that on a pretty regular basis, and a lot of it is really determined by student success. We don't want to offer a course that our students aren't going to be successful in, and we're trying to get better at helping students understand if they're a good candidate for an online experience or not. And I think we have gotten better at that. But it is something we pay attention to. We're a pretty data-driven organization. So taking a look at the success of students based on modality is something we do routinely.
Our guest this hour is David Harrison, president of Columbus State Community College. Coming up, we're going to talk about plans for some changes to Columbus State Community College's campus and a new partnership with The Ohio State University. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Columbus State is Ohio's largest community college, serving 40,000 students, full and part-time. Columbus State recently announced a new partnership with Ohio State University. It will provide tuition-free pathways for some students to finish their bachelor's degree. It's called the Buckeye Bridge Initiative. Still with us to tell us more about Columbus State and this partnership is David Harrison, president of Columbus State Community College. Thanks for being here, David.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. So how did Buckeye Bridge come about, and who came up with the name? It's a very cute name.
I'll give Alan Krauss, who heads up marketing for us, credit for the name.
Okay.
When President Carter joined Ohio State, he and I had lunch soon after he started at our student-run restaurant in Mitchell Hall called Degrees. Mm-hmm. And in that at that moment, Ted said, let's do something big together. So we started thinking about what that might look like. And we're in a couple of community meetings together. I had been talking about Columbus Promise to different community groups, which is a partnership with the city and private philanthropy that provides a free path for Columbus City School students to Columbus mm-hmm. State. And I think President Carter was intrigued by that principle. So we started kicking around what it might look like as a partnership between Columbus State and Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Frankly, he came forward with this mm-hmm. idea of having a tuition-free experience for all of our graduates, all Columbus State graduates, who are from families with $100,000 in annual income or less. Mm-hmm. So any student who's an Ohio resident who earns an associate degree from Columbus State will have an opportunity through Buckeye Bridge to get a full scholarship for their bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. I have spent a lot of my career, both here and in other places, working on what we call 2+2 arrangements, where you take your freshman and sophomore year at a community college mm-hmm. and finish your bachelor's degree at a university. None of them have the scholarship component. Mm. This is going to be a game changer for a lot of families.
How is it funded? Is Ohio State funding the cost?
They are. They are. They've done the math. And again, I give President Carter a lot of credit because he gets asked that question a lot, mm-hmm. And he can tell you what it's going to cost him. But I think he understands. They understand what the impact is going to be, certainly in our community, but even on their campus. And if you think about the experience at the university level, a lot of the bottlenecks are in the freshman and sophomore year. Most classes have capacity at the junior and senior year. So the ability for our students to come in is going to make a big difference. One of the things we are working with them on, and I give President Carter a ton of credit, but his whole team and our whole team have really leaned in on this. Jen Gilbride Brown from my team has done an amazing job of connecting dots. We're really trying to make this about the student experience. So as this comes to steady state, really helping students not start think about that when they're finishing their experience at Columbus State, but when they're starting that experience at Columbus State. So the courses they're taking in their first 2 years with us are directly aligned with mm-hmm. what will help them complete their bachelor's degree.
I can see how it would work with the juniors and seniors, because at Ohio State, they have a problem with having enough room for all the freshmen that
right.
want in, right? And
right.
and they have to live on campus for right. freshman and sophomore year, so that's another hurdle. But
right.
then if they're coming in as a junior, I could see how there's more room.
Exactly, yep.
Okay, so you're saying that not every Columbus State student is eligible. They have to have a family income of $100,000 or less.
Right.
Is that right? Okay. And is there going to be a cap on this of how many people?
No. I mean, we've really set this up to be sustainable ongoing. I think people are going to be surprised by, first of all, how many people take us up on it, mm-hmm. but that in the overall economic ecosystem, it's going to be a net positive for everyone. I really believe that.
So if you're it starts next year, right? Or in 2026?
Right. Yeah, we're graduates for 2026.
So you have to graduate with an associate's degree in 2026 to qualify? Because students who know about it coming in can plan, but the ones you have right now are going to have to be in the right sweet spot?
Yeah, we're working through that, though. I mean, that's manageable. There's a ton of details we're still working through.
Yeah.
But the agreement says that you would enroll within 3 semesters after you graduate. So it doesn't have to be a direct linear process. I mean, even our students who graduate next spring, they could enroll a year later and still work through that. But the students who, again, are enrolled now, we're having conversations with them right now on the best path for them.
And pardon me for not knowing this, but most of the degrees at Columbus State, are they two-year associate's degrees? Do you have four-year?
We have one bachelor's degree, a bachelor of science in nursing. That's our only bachelor's degree program.
Okay. So most people coming out do have that two-year degree. And if they want the bachelor's, they have to go somewhere else.
Yes.
Unless they're doing nursing. Okay. Right, got it. So will there be any costs for these students who qualify? Will they pay? Ohio State is known for its fees. Will they pay any of that?
This is covers tuition and fees.
Okay. And except maybe housing, they'll have to.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, as I said before, I mean, most of our students work. They do have to be full time students
for Ohio State.
You have to come. Yeah. So that will be a limiting factor for some of our students, because, like I said, they all work. But it is open to any of our graduates.
Okay. And is it for any Ohio State degree program? Because some degree programs have very strict requirements at Ohio State.
Yeah, that's still something we're working through. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some programs that OSU freshmen don't get in. Mm-hmm. So there's not a guarantee in that regard. That'll be merit-based. But those are things that will be working through as time goes on.
All right. Well, you'll have to come back, and when the bridge is open and they're going across the bridge, you'll have to come back and tell me about it.
Would love to. Yeah. And I'm glad you like the name, because that's something, you know, there's a lot of discussion about it, and it is really resonating with our students and with the community.
I like alliteration too. You know, no, that's just me. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the importance of community colleges with David Harrison, president of Columbus State Community College. So you also are in talks or in discussions in some sort of phase of building a YMCA facility. It could be coming to the Columbus State campus. It would include a drop-in child care center. That would also be a part of the project. So tell me how this came about and where we are in the timeline for this YMCA facility.
Well, this has been under discussion for years. When the downtown Y closed several years ago, the city of Columbus reached out to me to see if there was a way that we could work with the Y to keep a downtown presence for the YMCA. And we actually put a plan together, but didn't have any way to pay for it. So it sat on the shelf. COVID hit. You know, we all went different directions. And then in 2019, we our board established an auxiliary entity, 501c3, called Columbus State Community Partners, to really help us with our real estate. As you and I talked about off air, we've got a lot of surface parking.
Yeah, I was going to say, did YMCA come to you because you have the land?
We've got land.
Yeah.
We've got land. Mm-hmm. Through, frankly, Zach Woodruff, who now heads up Community Partners for us. Zach had some conversations with the Ohio Department of Higher Education on what was possible. And we learned that it would be possible to have a student fee that could fund this project. But it would require a student approval through a vote. So that's the process we've been going through.
Yeah. So this idea of having students vote on this assessment fee, that seems unique. Have you ever had students vote on something before?
It was new for us. We had we don't have formal student government. So the infrastructure wasn't in place to do that. So our IT team, along with our student affairs team, along with the YMCA, really got together to come up with a creative way to help students express their views. We wanted to make sure the vote was of highest integrity. The students who were eligible to vote, there were some who were and some who weren't. We serve a lot of College Credit Plus students who are in high schools and never come on campus, so they didn't vote, for example. But we wanted to make sure students only voted once and those kinds of things. And so there was a technological lift to make this happen. But the poll was open the last 2 weeks of September, closed on September 30th, passed with 90% approval from our students. And the thing I was very happy with that, but I was also happy with the turnout. 13% of our eligible students voted. And I was talking with someone, so that was over 2,000 students. I was talking with someone yesterday about a different election somewhere else, and they said something about an 11% turnout. I'm like, we beat that with our YMCA vote.
All right. So 13% is a good turnout for an off-year election random vote, I guess, right? So everyone, it was like an online thing. So did students get like a secure email and then they said vote for this fate?
That's exactly right.
Okay. And you gave them a deadline and said you have to vote by this date, kind of like instead of having one single election day, right? Okay. And how did the vote say how much the fee was? Like what?
Yeah.
What's the amount?
$65 per semester.
$65 per semester per student.
Right.
And the money will, is it forever or?
It'll go to, it'll pay the construction of the building and ongoing maintenance, ongoing support for the building and help the YMCA run it.
Okay. So, so are we, because the vote was successful, will the next semester, will you charge the $65 fee and get going on this project or not quite?
The next semester, so one of the benefits of the students is they get access to NEY in the community, and that'll start immediately. The fee will start in 2027, and the construction we think will start the next year.
Okay. So the facility that you plan to build on Columbus State's campus on one of those parking lots that you have, is it going to be open to the general public too? It's not just for Columbus State
students.
That's
correct. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're benefiting the whole community, but Columbus State is paying this, students are paying this fee because of the access they'll have.
Yeah. If for your listeners who are familiar with downtown, this will be, we think, on the corner of Long and Cleveland. We'll really be catalytic for that development. We're hoping to have some adjacent green space that's a part of town where there aren't any parks. So we want to create some green space there. We are talking with COTA about having a Linkus transit hub there. And there's some other things that are in the works. So we think this could really be catalytic for the community.
Okay. And someone who is at Columbus State in their second year right now, you know, it takes a while to build a building. They won't actually see the benefit of it. But you said that they get a Y membership as a part of their fee?
They do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you touched on this, but once the building is up and running, free childcare is a big part of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of our key principles around student success is eliminating non-academic barriers. And food, housing, transportation, and childcare are the barriers that many of our students face. So the ability for our students to have, again, drop-in childcare when they're taking a class or going to work or doing both will be a game changer.
So this is not just like a drop-in childcare while you're working out for an hour. This is actual childcare where you can go to class and take a couple classes and your kid can be taken care of.
That's correct. And will be available in the evenings too.
Wow. All right. Well, all right. So how far away are we from this actually being built?
28, I think, is when we're hoping for the grand opening. Mm-hmm. The design will start. Now, I don't want to get ahead of it because from here, it goes to our board of trustees for approval. And then once, assuming our board approves it, then it'll go to the Ohio Department of Higher Education for their final approval. It'll be sometime, we think, assuming those go forward, the first quarter of 26 when we start the design process.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking with the president of Columbus State Community College, David Harrison, and he's going to stay with us after the break. And coming up, we'll hear more about David Harrison himself, how he ended up in higher education. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. We're talking about the economic and educational importance of community colleges this hour. The largest community college in Ohio is Columbus State Community College. And with us today is President David Harrison, the president of Columbus State Community College. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So let's get to know you a little bit better. You've been president of Columbus State since 2010, but higher education wasn't your original career path. So how'd you end up leading Columbus State?
It was a kind of a long and winding road. I was the first in my family to go to college. I tell our students all the time, I didn't know this was a job when they were, when I was where they are. I went to University of Dayton because that was one of the few places I could study engineering and play football, and I wanted to do both. Earned a chemical engineering degree there, and then moved to Pittsburgh, got an MBA at the University of Pittsburgh, and worked for Accenture way before it was Accenture in Pittsburgh, and met my wife there. We got married. She was a special education teacher in a low-income area in the Pittsburgh region, and I was traveling all the time, and I'd get home on Friday night and tell her a little bit about my week, and she'd tell me a lot about her week, and her week sounded more rewarding than mine did. So that really is kind of what lit the fuse. Then our daughter was born, and I didn't want to be a weekend dad, was visiting my family in Cincinnati, and there was an ad in the Cincinnati Inquirer that said "Create the Future," and it was a new partnership between University of Dayton, where I'd gotten my engineering degree, and Sinclair Community College, partnership called the Advanced Integrated Manufacturing Center. That the two schools were coming together to help local manufacturers. I threw my hat in the ring, and they hired me as the director of what we called the AIM Center. And it was an immediate fit. I'd never been on a community college campus before till my interview, really, really loved it from the beginning. Both our sons were born in Dayton. I was having a conversation with my boss at one point and said, "Don't get me wrong, I love what I'm doing, but I'm a young man, I don't have a career path." He said, "Go get your PhD and become a college president. We need young people to want to do this." So with three kids, I started commuting to Columbus from Dayton to get my doctorate, and still working full time.
All right. So I was reading a few articles in preparing for this show, and one article cited that you think the Central Ohio Compact is your premier achievement in your time as Columbus State president. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, it's a partnership between K-12 leaders, university leaders, employers, and other community agencies. And I'm not sure when I said that, but I don't disagree with it. But I think what it represents is really the important part. And it represents the partnership ethic that that Columbus State really tries to come forward with. And we've really operationalized that, I think, in some important ways. I mean, you just talked about Buckeye Bridge and the YMCA. I mean, those are both examples of our partner-first approach. And we started convening the Central Ohio Compact in 2011 with the Educational Service Center of Central Ohio as our partner. And it has been, I think, a good informal way for us to all learn together. And, you know, we get in one room maybe once or twice a year, but probably more importantly are the relationships that develop from that. I say all the time, I get a lot of work done with text messages and 10-minute phone calls. Those are based on relationships that start in bigger rooms. And the compact really was a catalyst to getting that started.
Another thing that you mentioned earlier in the show that I wanted to circle back to is the Columbus Promise. So having Columbus City Schools graduates be able to go to Columbus State if they want to. Tell me more about the Columbus Promise program.
Yeah, that started the conversation before the pandemic. It was in a community meeting, and Council President Shannon Harden pulled me aside and said, "Hey, I got an idea. I want to run by you. Let's get together." And it was Columbus Promise. We mm-hmm. didn't know it wasn't called that.
Again,
at the time.
You got to name things.
Yeah. But so we got our teams together and started working through it. And then the pandemic hit, and we both had other things going on. But then we started to see the impact of the pandemic on learning loss for high school students coming in. So I called President Harden back and said, "Hey, if this is something you're still interested in, it's needed now more than ever." And he leaned right in, and our teams got back together, and the city put $5 million in initially. Mayor Ginther has been hugely supportive from the jump. We were able to raise $6 million through private philanthropy. Columbus State, we put in $1 million to get it up and running. So the mm-hmm. first phase was the classes of 2022, 2023, and 2024. We're now in the process of extending that through at least 2027.
Okay. Yeah, so it has the funding to go through. So anyone who graduates through 2027 from a Columbus City School high school can go to Columbus State.
Yeah, right. Yes. Right now it's only for Columbus City Schools grads, but we really have a vision of trying to extend that much broader than that.
Is there an income requirement related, like the one, like the Buckeye Bridge will have?
There's not.
So anyone who graduates at...
Yeah, so if you think about it, right now, any Columbus City Schools graduate with a family income of less than $100,000 has a pathway to a free bachelor's degree at Ohio State coming through Columbus State.
Let's talk about trade programs a little bit, because I've done numerous shows about the need for more people to know how to work in the trade careers. There's a lack of knowledge, and the people who know how to build the things and fix the things are all retiring. So what is Columbus State doing to increase interest in the trade careers and also increase enrollment in programs that you already do have?
Yeah, our construction trades program has grown really as fast as any of our programs over the last few years. And I think part of it is fueled by the growth in Central Ohio. I mean, there are a lot of high-profile projects that people are starting to believe in. One of the issues with construction trades in the past has been it's busy when it's busy, but then there's downtimes. Mm. But we've got enough underway right now that there's a line of sight to have a very successful and lucrative 30-year career in these programs. And I think people are really starting to understand that.
Columbus State had proposed a career training center in the Eastland area. It would have prepped construction workers, perhaps first responders too, but it was canceled this summer. What happened there?
A priority for us is stewardship of public resources. And we work to make sure we're having maximum impact of the capital resources that we have on the most number of students. As we started working through the Career Development Center, construction costs rose rapidly, both because of inflation and also because of the intricacies of some of the programs. Our folks worked hard on figuring out what the best value proposition was going to be. And we're able to find a way to keep our construction trades program on our Columbus campus. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a renovated facility, and it'll be really important for that program. But without construction trades, the capital investment for the number of students that we were going to serve in Eastland, the math just didn't work, we weren't able to proceed.
Yeah, it's interesting that you were trying to build a program in construction, but you needed to construct a building. And like, there's irony there, I guess.
No, I agree. And the costs really before we built the first classroom were difficult. Mm.
So if there's a need and a desire in the Eastland area, can you work on helping the students get from Eastland down to your campus then?
Yeah, the Eastland area is really important to us. Mm-hmm. And we're continuing to stay involved there. We know this decision disappointed a lot of people, including us. So we want to continue to lean in there and do what we can to support the Eastland community proper, but then also to do what you just said and make sure that the students that are there have a clear path to good jobs through our programs at Columbus State.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about community colleges with David Harrison, president of Columbus State Community College. Earlier, we talked about how you are on the verge of building a YMCA facility, but you also have other construction going on. You are building a new academic hall called Ohio Health Hall. How big and what is this going to house?
Ohio Health Hall will be about 80,000 square feet and will house our health sciences programs. This came through Franklin County bond proceeds that allowed us to build the building. But we had worked closely with Ohio Health and other employers during the pandemic about what the disruption that had happened in the healthcare employment, and talked about working together to double our outcomes in nursing and in other key fields. We could build the building, but we didn't have the funding to hire faculty and staff to meet that growing demand. Ohio Health came forward with a $25 million endowment, which for community colleges is unheard of nationally. But that will allow us to hire faculty and staff in perpetuity. We had the groundbreaking a couple of weeks ago. We'll have classes starting there in the fall of 2027, and it'll be transformational in really important ways. Healthcare programs are growing faster than any of our other programs. Once we get Ohio Health Hall up and running, that will allow us then to go in and renovate our current healthcare labs and classrooms, our folks are really excited about it.
Is that what was missing with the Eastland project? Is that a part of the reason it didn't work out? You didn't have this like big company like Ohio Health coming in with a big endowment?
Well, that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Building a building is one thing, but operating it successfully over a long period of time is something you've got to consider.
Mm-hmm. You have also kind of regional campuses. I don't know whether I want to call them campuses, but that you have and you're in different parts of Central Ohio. And I had known that, but I didn't know how many. Tell our listeners where you are.
So we have a full campus in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And it's really thriving. We're doing really good work there. We've got a learning center in Dublin that frankly is also they're all thriving. But
wait, you have a campus in Dublin and the learning center's where?
The campus is in Delaware.
Delaware.
The learning center is in Dublin.
Okay, Delaware.
And then we've got an accelerated training center in New Albany. Right now, that doesn't offer credit college courses, but a lot of workforce-based training. If you think about the economic growth in New Albany, a lot of it right now is fueled in the bioscience space. Mm-hmm. So those companies have been great partners, and we are preparing their entry-level technicians at our accelerated training center.
Okay. There were conversations at the State House whenever the whole Senate Bill 1 thing was going through about certain careers that maybe didn't need a bachelor's degree and could have an associate's degree. Have you been in those conversations where you're saying, like, having an associate's degree and just getting to work, that works?
I've been in those conversations most of my career. But I think it's even more targeted now. And it doesn't mean the bachelor's degree is not important, but the bachelor's degree may not be important for the first job. Mm-hmm. And the ability to work with companies to really understand what that credential needs to be, what the entry-level skill set is, and then ultimately what the career path is. We've got a lot of examples of students going into especially technician-level jobs with an associate degree and then getting their bachelor's degree working full time with tuition paid by the employer. That's a game changer for a lot of students and families.
I mentioned you have more than 40,000 full and part-time students. What is your highest enrolled program? What's your biggest?
Healthcare. Yeah.
Everything in healthcare?
Yeah. Our health we really kind of categorize things by pathways. Mm-hmm. And our highest enrolled pathway is healthcare, followed pretty closely by the Associate of Arts and the Associate of Science, which are transfer paths. So mm-hmm. with Buckeye Bridge, I do see that moving forward. And we've seen tremendous growth in recent years in IT, engineering, technology, and then we mentioned construction trades.
We only have 30 seconds left, but how many students do you have coming in who are just there to take core level classes because they want their 4-year degree to be cheaper?
We've got about, I would say, 8,000 students that are in that category.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today, and it's been a pleasure to learn more about you and about Columbus State. Our guest this hour has been Columbus State Community College President David Harrison. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's conversation, you can listen at our website. That's WOSU.org/allsides. You can subscribe to our podcast. You can listen to every episode for free in the WOSU mobile app. Also, be sure to like our show on Facebook, and you can follow the show on Instagram at All Sides WOSU if you want to see some behind-the-scenes photos. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.